the place where real dialogue matters.
Make some noise for that sound, man.
It is time to take flight with Audio Airstrike.
Welcome to another edition of Audio Airstrike. I'm Everett Hall McNeil. Thank you for joining us. This is episode 158. The following is a compilation of some of the best moments from the year 2020 on Audio Airstrike. I hope you guys are enjoying your Christmas and your holidays. Enjoy this compilation. We're not going to all agree on the same exact thing. But when we come together, we don't let that stop us from learning from each other.
Facts.
So when it comes towards, like, there may be some things I may not understand from a mental perspective that they could help me on. Or maybe there's some things from a spiritual perspective they don't understand that I can help them on. I'm just using examples so people get an idea. When I'm meeting people, I'm not asking you to be a perfect, this perfect, unrealistic personality that's in my head. I don't do that to people. And I don't have people do that to me. The way I look at it is this. I'm going to treat you the same way I would want to be treated. I may not agree with everything that you say or do, but just on a simple fact, you're a human being. I'm a human being. Both of our blood is the same color. Look, we may have different backgrounds and this and that, but look, I said I'm going to give you the benefit of a doubt. Let's just get to know each other and see where this goes.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I agree. That was very well deserved.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He definitely deserves an award, and Harvey Weinstein deserves time in jail. He is currently now going to court and paying, hopefully, by the time this whole court process ends, he will pay for his crimes. I don't have too much to say about this, but they need to lock that man up and throw away the key.
Right.
This man is responsible for making Hollywood a living nightmare. The stuff that he's done, the people he's manipulated, the different women that, and maybe actors too. He has sat back over here and he has been aware of this. At one point he was one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. I guess he thought he was untouchable, thought he could get away with it. That's not the case here.
Right.
One of the things that we need to take into account is that at some point, if you keep doing this deplorable stuff, it's going to come out.
This is news to me. I had no idea that Justin was going through this at all. But also, Avril Lavigne went through the same thing. She took off music, and a lot of people don't know about that. And then she took off, I don't think it was maybe 4 to 6 years of music, and then all of a sudden she came out with this amazing album. A lot of people were thinking that she was going through the divorce, and like she was going through relationship things, and she kept it completely silent. And I get, like, that's really something personal, and you don't really want to like reveal something like that because it's traumatic to yourself, and it's just kind of like, you know what, I'm going to keep this to myself. But like, so, like, it's crazy to me that that went through. This also hits, like, a personal side because one of my family members also suffers from Lyme disease, and I understand the toll that that takes because, like, she has the stage 4, like, the worst case, and it hits her in, like, the most inconvenient time. So, like, that hits home, and I understand, like, so I can understand why he took it off because that's just way too much.
No, man, I'm going to give you a real deal. I mean, I come from a place called White Lock, you know. Better known as Reservoir Hill. Grew up with my mom and my stepdad until he went to prison and I was 10 years old. And my biological father never was in my life. He was the first person who actually put drugs in my hand at 10 years old. And I think through that experience, I created what I call addictive behavior. You know, again, my mom got high or used drugs, you know, majority of my teenage life into adulthood, and you know, she ended up attracting HIV. She died in 1999 when I was in prison. You know, went to college, you know, for real estate and psychology. You know, a mixture of both worlds, but now I'm from the streets. You know, I never had it easy, but it wasn't so hard where as though I could make excuses. I knew right from wrong, and I chose to make the bad decisions at a point in my life where I could have turned and did something positive. So I went to jail for 12 years, came back home, started my company called Stokely Project. I mean, I'm all about philanthropy and giving up. My community initiatives is close to my heart and my soul. I love my children. I love my city, you know. And I'm here to say that, you know, no one's perfect. You know, I made some mistakes, but again, I sought atonement and forgiveness by high power, so there's nothing man can say to me about the things I've done. I wasn't a bad person. I just got caught up in a culture who what normal people would normally do when they need certain things. You know, again, right. As I said earlier, you know, with their scarce resources, you find ways to make money. My mom was gone. Father wasn't there, so I did what I thought I had to do. And may sound like a cop out to some, but it is what it is. You know, you have to put yourself in my shoes, which is a form of empathy that a lot of people can't use. So I'm here to tell you, man, that everybody can turn around. Everybody can make a mistake, but everybody also can get back up. And if you don't get up, then that means that you wanted to be down there, and that's not how I want to be remembered.
The genres, for a while, segregated everyone, but it seems like people are starting to come back together mm-hmm. and kind of say, hey, we're musicians. I know I do this, you do that, but let's see what we can do. Perfect example is Nas. He came out with a K-pop band, Billy Ray Cyrus, and who was the little kid? I can't remember the little kid.
Lil Nas X?
No, there was a little tiny boy that was.
Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah, that was a little. I hate to get racial, but a little white kid was, so was on stage with them. I don't remember who he was, but like all those guys came together to sing this one song, and they were enjoying themselves, and that's kind of like what music should be like. Right. It shouldn't be. You know, I get it. We have different genres and stuff, but it's not a competition. Right. It should be like a big family. That's one of the things I love about going to music conferences, because you have like 300 people or 3,000 people or more. And, you know, you have rappers, you have country people, you have people from Germany, Italy, all over the world doing their own things, classical and everybody just gets together and they'll find a corner. They'll have their little micro mini instruments with them and just start jamming. And that's kind of what I saw in the Grammys. That's kind of what I'm starting to see. I don't want to say it's becoming mainstream, but this is what I'm seeing in more music these days.
Yeah, you're seeing more community-based
pieces.
You know what I mean? It's one of those situations where In order for somebody to be paid well, they have to love doing what they're doing. And because that adds value to what you're able to do. And I think a lot of people miss it. I think a lot of people get caught up in what you was caught up in was I stopped loving it because somebody was telling me like just what they wanted. And I was just kind of like a puppet on a string. Well, here you go mentally. And your heart wasn't in it. And I think kind of taking that time to get to that happy medium where you're able to, it's like my heart's in it this time, so I'm gonna push. And that's why, you know, so that's why some people, you know, move on and they do ownership. That's why some people move on and they do their own brands. It's because there's a sense of when you are at a place creatively where you there's a sense of freedom and your heart's in it, that's like heaven to a creative. Mm-hmm. Because there is no plateau. There's nobody above. There's nobody you feel like that's above you right here being like, I need that. None of that. When you're in your space and it's just you or whoever you're collaborating with and all you guys are on the same page, or it's just you and you're just able to freely do what you do without any restrictions, it's the best place for a creative to be in, because out of that spontaneous element could come something that's very special. I told them no, and they told me the news, and I was instantly didn't want to go anywhere, instantly saddened by the news, especially the fact that him and his daughter were on that plane, that helicopter, I should say. And it's very, very unfortunate because there was so much that he wanted to do past the point of basketball. You're talking about somebody who we know he's one of the most decorated athletes ever. We know his killer instinct is the closest to Jordan we've ever seen. I understand that. But outside of that, he was able to not only morph into that, but he was also to morph into a better husband. He was able to morph into a better role model. He was able to morph into so many different facets past basketball. He was able to compartmentalize his mind to be like, all right, basketball is done, I'm moving on. And for him to sit over there and be like, okay, I want to tackle this, I want to tackle this, I want to tell stories, I want to do these avenues and things to help people out. Just his humanitarianism, that doesn't get set, that doesn't get a lot of spotlight on it. But the different efforts that he was able to do and the number of people that he was able to impact is just something very, very special. There's been talk from several players about, you know, memories of him and different stuff of that nature. It feels weird saying rest in peace Kobe Bryant, because you look at him and you go, guy's in phenomenal shape, and guy has, I mean, he's in phenomenal shape, was in phenomenal shape for somebody who's 40 years old. Cardio probably through the roof. You've been ripping and running for like up and down the court for doggone near 20 years. Your cardio is going to be excellent over many people. And for this to happen, unfortunately, and for so many people to see him loving life and this and that, is very sad, is very unfortunate. And I will say this, this doesn't feel like a typical celebrity death. This feels like a family member passed away. And this is something that we're not too keen on when it comes to Kobe and whatever. And one thing that he's able to accomplish is touching people's heart.
What I think about the tragedy and what I think about Kobe and the love he's gotten, I think it's about damn time. I think ESPN has used Kobe as the catalyst of, is this guy a good player? Is this guy a good player? They've only basically used him in a pretty disparaging way, in my opinion. And now it's finally like, all right, we can give him his respect. And we can start, you know, recognizing the greatness that he had on the court. And not to say that they didn't think he was a great player, but to always constantly compare guys who haven't done as much or who are on their way to doing great things in their own right, just to put them up and get ratings. Because we all know the business. You say Kobe, the ratings go through the roof. You say Jordan, names go through the roof. So those guys are always constantly on the tip of everybody's tongues. As a fan, there's three types of people who are probably affected by this. There's the family, there's friends, and then there's the fans. I can only speak for the fan group, and this is one of the hardest deaths that I've seen, period. I was a big Kobe fan from probably the age of 8, 9. So you're talking about a lifelong, almost like a big brother, or almost like a slightly young uncle or something like that. So he's almost like family, and you watch him, and he grew from the young guy who was playing against all the old guys to being the main guy in the NBA to being the old guy. So you saw him through his whole life, and you felt like you grew with him, and as you grew and hit a certain stride, he was growing and hitting a certain stride. So it's almost like the parallels in your own life, you can see him in his. So it was hard, to say the least.
It's hard for the fans, it's hard for the friends, it's hard for the family members that have to immortalize and put to rest Kobe Bryant. So first off, we just want to give a shout out to everybody who's dealing with this tragic loss. Rest in peace, Mamba. Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. I definitely want to keep his wife, Vanessa, in prayer. That is not an easy thing to do, to deal with. You know, there's a lot of, I mean, all I can say is prayers to that whole family. This is a very hard time for them. He will definitely be in the Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, for sure. The logo might be debatable, but he will be in the Hall of Fame for sure.
They said, so this is his first year of eligibility. He'd have gotten in.
Right.
But they're saying they're not even going to vote. It was automatic.
Yeah, they're just going to make it automatic.
Can we touch on that logo thing for a second?
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
I really don't think they should change the logo. And this is coming from a Kobe fan, lifelong. I think the NBA is the only league that has a person as the logo, mm-hmm. and that person's still living.
Gotcha. Right?
And not to go from Jerry West to Kobe, you skip a lot of people in the middle. And I think it's just, it's a sign of respect to one, but it's a sign of disrespect to a lot of in the middle, to me.
We all know it's Jerry West.
Yeah.
But the NBA refuses to admit that it's Jerry West. They'll say it's nobody. Oh. It's, yeah, you're right about that.
I did not know that.
You can look up the image. It's 100% Jerry West, but the NBA has always denied that it's Jerry West on the logo. Or they say they won't say who it is, at the very least.
Either way, I look at it like this. Regardless of what's been going on, I think Kobe is going to be celebrated regardless if he's the logo or in the Hall of Fame. Gail King has a much bigger platform, but she is also at the mercy of the network to a point. I am not trying to minimize the error of her ways. CBS made a decision to put out that segment of a clip. Gail King made a decision to carry out that thought, which she, from what I've heard, has apologized for. And Snoop, grieving over the loss of his friend, somebody who he considers a brother, said what he said and later apologized for calling Gail King out of her name. Here's a couple of things. When it comes to people being a journalist and trying to be a talking head of some sort, I don't care if you're a radio personality, a news reporter, a sportscaster, anything, whatever fancy name you want to give yourself, you have a responsibility to sit back, make sure that everything that you are saying is accurate, as you're supposed to do. Does everybody do that in this day and age? No. Everybody was focused on what is going to get me clicks, what is going to get me more money. You know, I don't care if this person has not been put in the ground yet, has not been given the proper burial. I'm just going to take a crap on his name by bringing up his past ailments that he amended for. Deontay Wilder lost to Tyson Fury. And I heard people talking. He's not a real boxer. He's just a hard puncher, this and that. And that fight this past Saturday proved it. See, here's what we like to do in America. We will praise the winner, but we have more fun kicking the loser while he's down. You don't believe me? Watch enough sports shows and you'll see what I'm talking about. To the outside world, this looks like an L for Deontay Wilder. To him, he should take it as a learning lesson. To him, he should take it as, now I know what I need to do to be better. Now I need to figure out, okay, how do I prepare differently so this never happens to me again?
Okay, as a matter of fact, fine. No, fine. Okay. Okay, yeah. All
right, well, okay. Let me adjust the camera.
You don't have to do that.
Oh, I don't?
No, okay. It's fine. All
right, cool.
Stay focused.
All right. What you tell me stay focused for? This is my show.
There we go. There it is right there. Niggas always trying to tell you what's theirs. Niggas always want to tell you what's theirs. Yes, Everett, we know it's your show. Okay, all right. Okay. Yes, clearly it's your show. Yes. When people... Hey, to everybody out there, this is Everett's show, okay? Yes, niggas always want to tell you what's theirs, okay? Damn, self-promotion at its worst. Lord have mercy. All right, nigga, yeah, please, hurry up. Damn, folks always want to tell you, like, bro, we know.
The biggest news story, I don't even need to say exactly what it is. I just need to say one word, coronavirus.
Immunosuppressed. And we know, particularly in Wuhan, China, where they had some of the data showed that there were, at one point, if you're looking at the data, they had 76,000 confirmed cases, laboratory tested cases of people with the COVID 19 infection. Of that number, there were 67,000 people who recovered. 67,000 that recovered, and I'm not saying the other people died, the difference, but that's the actual number they said that had recovered, which you can see is pretty large number. The other thing is there is data where we have even people of extreme age, as high as age 94, recovering from this COVID-19 infection. And then infections in infants, where they've recovered.
These backwood Bamas are wild on this documentary. This is nuts.
I like Joe Exotic. I'm dead ass. He like big cats. He raises big cats. He take care of the big cats. He puts on a show with his big cats. What's wrong with that? I'm more concerned with the woman that was opposing him, who was doing the same shit but calling him the bad guy. But see
how about that?
Different. She presents different. He wasn't willing to change his image. Image-wise, white people would rather she represent them than he.
Right.
Not only does he present as you said, white trash, but he's also gay.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that. But also, he's capitalizing and he owns all of his distribution stream. He's vertically integrated. She's literally telling us about how she doesn't want animals in cages with animals in cages behind her. My man's keeping it. See, my thing is, if you racist, right, and you walk in here and say, "What's that nigger doing?" I'm probably not even going to react. I'm going to tell you why, because I know exactly what the fuck I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. It's the closet racist that I got a problem with, because you moving behind my back. If you big and bad and you want to be whatever it is, then be that all the way and deal with whatever comes with it. And that's what he do. He like, "I like big cats. I like to put on the show. I'm a gay man. I built my own freaking park to do all of my shit in. You don't have to be bothered by me. I exist here. You can come here and deal with my shit or not."
Do you find, let me ask you this.
Meanwhile, old girl is lobbying to make everybody believe her point. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's kind of obvious. You can look at her face and tell, you know, she killed her husband, right? You know for a fact she probably killed that husband.
Shitty eating tiger meat. I don't fuck with her.
Somebody looked that crazy. Somebody's in love with cats that much wearing cat print. I can't fool with it, bro. I'm sorry. I just can't fool with it. You looking that crazy? Like that, something about her eyes tell me, like, I will kill somebody and then get away with it. Because I know exactly what I'm doing.
She'll kill him and feed him to the tigers.
District Attorney Durton formally requested for the GBI to investigate the death of Ahmaun Arbery. The Kingsland office initiated investigation on May 6th, 2020. On April 29th, 2020, the Glenn County Police Department requested that the GBI investigate allegations of threats against the GCPD and individuals involved in the active investigation. On the morning of May 5th, 2020, the GCPD requested the GBI investigate the public release of the video related to Aubrey's death. These investigations are ongoing. If anyone has information related to these cases, please contact the GBI at 1-800-597-TIPS. So, I'm going to just put my initial thoughts out there. For one, I'm happy that they arrested those two demonic cowards. Because that's what they are. Let's call it for what it is, a bunch of cowards. Anytime that you kill an innocent, unarmed man simply because he looks suspicious to you when it's really your racism showing, it is deplorable. It's not how a human being should act. It's dead wrong. as an African American, I am sick and tired of being one of the nicest people. And Neil, you're that way too. I'm sick and tired of being labeled automatically as a threat when I know I haven't done anything wrong. I should be able to walk freely. I should be able to have a nice jog around my neighborhood. I should feel safe and secure, considering I'm an American and I pay taxes too. So when these things keep happening, and in the past, I've had people come up to me and be like, well, that has nothing to do with you. Why are you so upset? Let's keep it all the way a buck. This could happen to Neil. This could happen to me. This can happen to any African-American male walking, no matter where they're at. When we step in a room, there are things that we have to worry about that most people don't. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. We can't even wear black. We can't even wear the color black without wondering, is somebody going to think I'm suspicious, or is somebody going to think I'm dangerous just because I have a certain color garment on? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is able to walk around, wear whatever they want to wear, wear whatever garment they want to, with any type of language on it if they want to. We, as African American males and as black kings, we have to think differently because mm-hmm. of how this society has looked at us for years. Just because there's a pandemic that is going on, just because people are staying at home and we know some stuff is being listed from a certain phase, that does not stop somebody from acting in racist, demonic behavior, because that's exactly what it is. I'm happy these guys are arrested. I'm hoping that we do get a conviction and these guys get indicted on these charges.
Yeah.
And I want to say that I'm proud. I'm proud of everybody that lifted up their voice, that shared the pictures, that shared the photos, that shared the hashtags, that spoke out, that made the phone calls. I'm proud that we got this together, because I did not want to see another black man not get justice. I don't want to see another family that is African American. And don't get it twisted. If this was the reverse, I'd be just as appalled. But this is not the case. So don't play that game with me. And a side note, anybody who sits over there and tries to be nitpicky about certain things, lose my number, never talk to me again. Because this is not the time for that. We've mm-hmm. seen too many people this past last decade lose their life and people showing their true colors being skeptical of what's right in front of them. Mm-hmm. News flash. They look at us as niggers, not men. That's what they look at us as. I'm being harsh for a reason. Because some people can go into certain markets and certain places, not have to worry about being looked and judged a certain way. We do.
Yeah.
That's how we're looked at. When it comes to certain people that decides I'm going to be divisive and racist today. We're not standing for it. We're not going to stand for this no more. We are going to be looking at laws very carefully. We are going to be looking at gun laws very carefully. We're going to be looking at every fabric of this society on a more careful basis. This generation coming up is not putting up with that. And this is a sign of a changing of the times. We are not having no more Trayvon Martins. We are tired of it. Point blank, period. We are tired of it.
Yeah.
I'm tired of seeing the pain on my brother's face as I look through him via screen, and the built up frustration that me and him have had every time a hashtag is dropped, every time that somebody says Black Lives Matter and some idiot goes around on a rebuttal, like as if we're trying to turn the narrative. The narrative is this: we want to be treated just as everybody else is treated. Period. Yeah. That's been the whole entire thing that we have wanted. Nothing more, nothing less. We don't want no handouts.
Yeah, contrary to what, say that.
Yeah, we don't want no handouts. Contrary to what people want to say, we don't want no handouts. We just want you to be treated with the same amount of respect that you give somebody else. Point blank, period. If you can't give us that, shut up, leave us alone, and don't get in our way. Just don't. Because, oh, we have gone through enough. We have already dealt with stuff from an economic standpoint. We're already dealing with stuff from an internal personal standpoint in terms of the family, in terms of the family structure and everything like that. We're dealing with so much. And the last thing we need is somebody nitpicking how we're supposed to move. If you are not helping, if you are not sharing the hashtags, if you are not standing with us on the front line to see justice, considering we are fellow Americans, you're part of the problem.
So, you know, that was definitely, I tell you, man, that last dance was, for us basketball enthusiasts, that's the reason for this podcast tonight. It was great, man. Now I'm ready to just go binge it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you might as well. When you look at everything that you love about sports is in this documentary, from the behind the scenes to what's going on up until the recap of the grit and the grind, and from the time preseason starts all the way to the regular season, all the way to playoffs, into the finals, you get an account of everybody's mindset, what was going on, what was happening, the key players involved, even crucial plays, even in-depth crucial plays. Like, and the thing, crazy thing about it is, like, for example, flu game. Flu game wasn't even a flu game. It was food poisoning.
Food poisoning. Yeah, see that? Yeah, it was food poisoning, man. Now, I question you. You think it was intentional?
I find it very interesting that you only need one person to deliver a pizza. They said that it was like a group of people because they knew Jordan was in that room.
All right, so these pizza guys, so obviously these not basketball. I'm gonna play two sides. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm gonna play it this way. They say that city Utah, they notorious for, you know, for trying to harm their opponents, right? But just say, for example, that pizza probably was sitting out all day, right, or whatever. And you piece the delivery, because think about it, nothing else was open. So he normally doesn't even get that.
Right.
That's the last thing. Everything else was closed. He don't get no pizza, but he was hungry. You know, he normally get room service or something like that, some upper echelon food. So he had to resort to get pizza. That probably was the last thing there. And they just sitting out all day, right, you know, whatever. And then the reason why I was five, because it was like, oh, yo, Michael Jordan ordered this. We can go get a glimpse. Come on, man. If I was working there, would you have rolled too?
Let me paint a picture for you. The lifeguard sits by the beach. His job is to make sure that everybody is safe on the beach. You will never see a lifeguard not on the beach unless you trespass. Now, here's the thing. There's other people in the water. They're swimming fine. They don't need a life. You know, they have life jackets. They're swimming fine. There's this one person that is drowning. They don't have a life jacket. Nobody gave them one. The lifeguard has to go out there and swim past everybody to get to the one. Now, I want you to take into account this. When you say all lives matter to me, that's like seeing somebody drowning and being like, oh, well, all lives matter. I know he's drowning over there, but all lives matter. That is what it sounds like. It sounds disrespectful. At the moment right now, the person that is drowning in the ocean of systematic racism and oppression is black, and he doesn't have a lifeguard jacket. Now, the question becomes, who the hell is going to step up and be the lifeguard? And to kind of give you insight on how I was feeling over the last two episodes was anger, pain, and deep sadness. First off, I want to thank all of the friends that reached out to me, checked up on me and see how I was doing. I definitely appreciate that. I definitely appreciate those who stood in the gap as allies and spoke out against the injustices that we are facing. And even though that we are on the eve of this so-called Independence Day on July 4th, as a nation, we are far from really seeing any sign of freedom when these discouraging acts of racial injustice still take place. It is 2020, and I still hear about lynchings. It is 2020, and police are still acting like modern day slave patrols pre-Civil War. It is 2020, and we are still protesting. We are still marching over racial injustices and systemic racism. It is 2020, and we are still the divided states of America. My heart still hurts because it's 2020 and we're still having this discussion. I'm very concerned. I signed petitions. I protested. I made phone calls asking those who hurt Breonna Taylor, murdered Breonna Taylor, murdered Ahmaud Arbery, murdered George Floyd, murdered Elijah McClain, and murdered Rashad Brooks. And until we understand the gravity of what is going on, and until we really use our power in our voting, in the protest, and by making the correct calls of the officials that can make the difference, if we take the foot off the gas pedal on any of those things, this will happen again.
Your void has to be filled. And you have to know that growth does not stop at marriage. Growth does not stop at that dream job. Growth does not stop at the kids. Growth does not stop at anything. You are a human becoming until the very day your heart beats for the last time. So when you are getting married or when you are getting into anything, you have to ask yourself, am I mentally, emotionally, and spiritually prepared to do whatever it takes to get to whatever the result is? If that result is a happy marriage, then you need to know what does that look like for you and what does that look like for the person you're marrying.
Absolutely. Because it's very important. Definitions and definitions, clear definitions are very, very important, man. I couldn't have said it better.
I'm surprised August wasn't on it, but then I can also understand. But I can only imagine, I can only hope that if that pain is still there, that Jada, Will, and August will have a sit down to get that full healing, because, you know, August felt compelled enough to speak on it, which means there was something that was still there that needed to be addressed. And as far as that goes, again, you got to figure out what it is that you want for you. And typically, once you know that, the person that's meant for you will reveal themselves. You'll just kind of, like they say, when you know, you know. You'll know because you know you, and you'll be like, huh, this fits.
We don't need to speak about that because the story hasn't been written yet. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the next time that we see each other. But we're having a different conversation about fails, you know, dating fails. So therefore, I'm not going to date publicly right now. The other three things that I would recommend for people who are out there dating in general, with or without a quarantine, is first, set your intentions, know what you're looking for, know what you're not looking for. And I recommend to my friends and family and people who reach out to me to build your ideal relationship, what that looks like to you, what your non-negotiables are before you look for an ideal person. Because the relationship is the inflexible part. The person is the flexible part. And when we plug in the right person to the right relationship, that's where we find success. And in that relationship, we, point number two is to set healthy boundaries. Okay, you called me the wrong name in bed. I'm going to set a boundary of letting you know that you did that. This is a this is me communicating to you that your behavior upset me. Here's our boundary. Can you actually fit within that boundary of not seeing anybody else but me if we're sleeping together? If that's a no, okay, thank you very much for being honest with me. I'm going to move on now. And then finally, the third thing I want people to know is like manage your own expectations. If you go into a new partnership in the first month, I was just chatting with a girl yesterday. She's like, oh my God, I've met my person. Okay, how long have you been dating? A month. And he's met all of my friends and all my friends love him. Awesome, that's great. Here's another question. Have you had your first conflict yet? When you get into your first conflict with your partner, that's when all of their stuff is going to come out. That's where all of your stuff is going to come out. And if you don't know how to manage your own expectations about what I need to hear in that first conflict, you're going to be at a loss there because you're going to come up with two different communication styles. One is a shutdown person. The other one is a screamer. One is a person who likes to run from conflict. The other person is likes to pursue conflict and won't let you leave the room without actually handling the business at hand. And so that's why I had that question for her of like, have you guys had your first bit of conflict yet? And that's when you really know, I like to call it love at first fight, not love at first sight. Because if you can get through that first fight with somebody, managing your own expectations and sharing your boundaries with your partner, and you both compromise and accept each other, then you're going to have a higher probability of being successful in your relationship in the future, long term.
And people have to understand something. He wasn't just known for, you know, Black Panther in terms of his acting. He was such diverse. He played Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, Jackie Robinson.
21 Bridges.
Being a cop on 21 Bridges and then doing the Spike Lee film for the Five Bloods. The diversity and the level of range in his acting ability for him to come off, even the Netflix movie Message to the King. That was the one that was under the radar. That was a pretty good film.
That was good. I saw that one.
Yeah. And
it was kidnapped or something.
Yeah. I think it was like his sister he was searching for. Yeah. That one. And for him to do all that and still be battling cancer, for him to visit other people that were struggling with cancer and other diseases, and for him to step out of himself, to step out of his circumstance and still put all that work in, he was diagnosed in 2016. This was kept private from the, that's why everybody's so hurt, because this was kept private from, nobody knew he was sick. There was rumors earlier this year when he looked a little bit more skinny, more than normal, but he always been slim.
Yeah.
He always been slim. That was his thing. He was a slender dude. And the only time you really saw him pack out muscle was like for Black Panther, for the Black Panther films, you know? And I think that one of the lessons that we need to understand from this is, man, is y'all got to live your life to the fullest. Whatever you got to accomplish, accomplish it now, because you're not guaranteed. Nobody is guaranteed 70 plus years of life. Nobody.
Man, you'd be surprised at all the shit you can get done when you're not chasing tail.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a lot of energy. And it goes back to that book, Think and Grow Rich. There's a concept that I reference in my book called sex transmutation. Sexual energy is the strongest form of all human energy, and it can be redirected and channeled into other means besides just physical expression. So if you're not out busting nuts, chasing girls, you can get a lot done with your sexual energy. It's like a he compared it to like a dam. Like you can dam a river, and the river, the water's going to build up, and then eventually it's going to find an outlet, and then it's going to go. And that's what happened to me. It's how I started my nonprofit. I wrote a couple of books. I went on a world tour speaking. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff in the last 9 years, but before that, when I was having sex, I had no idea what my purpose was. So I believe, you know, you gotta believe what God says about you, and then you gotta harness that sexual energy if you want to know why you're here, and then start take all that energy and start working on it. And then when you meet the woman, a woman that you're willing to go all in on, not a woman that you just want a piece of ass from, a woman that you're willing to go all in and marry. At that point, then that's when you get the woman. That's when it becomes the icing on the cake. Wait, I was honestly waiting because I was doing it for selfish reasons, thinking God would give me a wife if I didn't sin long enough. And I started to understand it. And, you know, all you have to do is look at delayed gratification, man. It's a universal principle that's true in every area of our lives. Everybody understands it when it comes like, oh, you want to buy a house? Can't spend money when you want to spend money. Oh, you want to get an education? Well, you got to stay home and study when your friends are out partying. Like, people get it on health and fitness. It's clear. People don't want to hear it when it comes to sex, but it's the truth. If you want a happy relationship, if you don't want to be one of the 50% divorce rate, let's be honest, 97% of the people in this country do not wait. 50% divorce rate. You think there's a correlation? I damn sure do. 50% of the people that stay married, the other half, stop having sex after year four. They stay together for the kids and for finances. So that now they're in a marriage that they're not even happy in. They're not having sex and they're stuck. It's called the sex trap. Me, I don't want that. I want to do something different. 6% divorce rate for people that wait. 6%, 94% success rate.
Business practices where there's a high turnover of staff just because you went over budget. Son, why the hell would you hire all these people knowing you're going to be over a budget in several months? Then you have to go and make cuts.
I would never.
And let
that.
These people go. No, but you as a business supposed to have your crap in order and supposed to have projections as to what money you're going to make, what's the average money you're going to make, and also you have to also budget out how much you're going to have to pay out in salaries.
Oh, of course, of course.
Give me the whole it's justified to make all these cuts and you letting people go by leaps and bounds, and then you got this high turnover rate, and then you wonder why people are hesitant to come through the door and work for you, because that's what it's going to run into. So if you're going to do that route, I'm not hating on you, but if you're going to do that route, you better just hire a bunch of temps so they know when their job starts and when their job ends.
Start by saying that, you know, it is so important. We've had over 1,000 men out there with us, but this is the problem. Our principle and our philosophy and how we do what we do is that we believe that there's a brother out there that need to find themselves, to find their experience through another brother. Like, some brothers been to prison, some brothers have different backgrounds, some brothers are from the nation, some brothers are Christians. That everybody out there represents a mirror that someone can reflect on and say, you know what? I was there and I want to move out of this place where I am. The problem is, if you're not out there with us, then some brother who would have identified and mirrored from you is not going to see himself. And that change is being held up. And I just invite you, every brother out there, that if you know there's a brother that has an experience that can identify with that experience, with your experience, that you have a voice and an opportunity to change someone's life. And we fully invite you to come out with us and be a part of this work. This mirror work that we're talking about, we're looking at the Zoom and a reflection. You know, one of the most powerful things, what even changed segregation was a guy named Kenneth Clark who took a mirror and said Black people couldn't even see themselves. Listen, what happens if, as Black men, we don't see, you supposed to be out there and someone has an image that your experience has, but they can't see themselves? Listen, you need to be out there so that some brother can find himself, then they can look at you and say, you know what?
You remind, it's something in you that I want to move towards. That's why each and every one of us out there, it's 1,000 of us out there, but there's so many more young brothers that need us. So that's my encouragement. Come on out there, be a mirror for another brother so he can find himself in you and you can begin to mentor and coach him up so they can get moving in his life.
Right. Like, it don't, like, the way that they was running the business back then, like, it, like, anybody could have got over on, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's happened to Dave. You've seen it happen to Richard. You've seen it happen to Red. You can name a many greats and they done got screwed over. I mean, they haven't got as badly screwed over as Dave did because, I mean, after he left, they just straight destroyed his name. And this man they tried to destroy this man's name, talking about, you know, he's a drug user, this, that, and the third. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like they didn't care about nothing. Like, this man got children, you know, he's married. At the time, he was in the special, you know, he was a devout Muslim. And they just straight dogged that man, bro. Like, you know, and if it's one thing, you know, and then, but also with that happening to Dave, it made people look at Comedy Central in a different way. Because if you think about it, back then, Comedy Central was fire, bro. Like, they had everything on there. If it wasn't South Park or The Chappelle Show or Crank Yankers or Drawn Together, and a handful of, like, other stuff. Like, they had Mad TV. Like, they had it popping over there, bro. Then they screwed over Dave, and everybody was like, bro, is this... I mean, if they was really... whatever happened to Dave probably made everybody else look at their contracts and be like, nah, bro, you're not about to get over on me. You know what I'm saying? And you're not about to tarnish my name while you get over on me. So, you know, and if you notice, Comedy Central ain't been the same since. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, destroying one man's name. Destroying one man's name. Like, y'all was so worried about that bag that you destroyed a man's name while also destroying your own company at the same time, because there was nobody on Comedy Central making more money than Dave. Period. You talking about a man within the span of 2 years, damn near almost became one of the highest paid comedians of all time. Even over Eddie Murphy, bro.
If people really want to start getting involved, they need to start at the local level. That's where it begins. That's where change really begins, is at the local level. Is finding out who your local representatives are, finding out what they believe in, finding out what they're doing to better your community. And that's something a lot of people I feel have gotten away from. Whereas when I grew up, I knew who my local representative is. I'm sure a lot of people nowadays where they live, they probably don't know who they voted for or who this person is. So in order to really enact change, we have to really start at the local level. Everybody thinks that they have to come out and vote for the presidential election. No, I think the most important elections are those of the local officials and the local judges and local sheriffs and everything else in your neighbor, in your community.
Well, that was George Floyd's brother too, right? He said the same thing when he was broadcasting live and CNN picked it up. He's like, if you really want to make a difference, he goes, stop breaking things. Stop stealing things. What are they going to think of us? If you're just projecting violence, that's all they're going to think that we are. And when I say we, it was mixed races in the protests and the looting and everything else. There was no division for race when it came to the looting and the riots.
It was everyone. It was
exactly.
It was
everybody.
You seen right black, on. Brown, white. You seen everybody taking everything.
For sure. So he comes out and goes, you really want to make a difference? Get your ass out there and vote. Start at the local level. That's how you start to affect change. It took so many years even for African Americans to have that right, or for women to have that right.
Exactly. Yep. To vote.
Now that we have it, almost less than half of America exercises it.
Yep. And there you have it. The best of 2020. Make sure that you check in with us on all social media platforms under the name Audio Airstrike. Thank you for listening to us throughout the episodes of this year, and we look forward to seeing you guys in the next year, 2021. Until next time, everybody, y'all take care.